Hey, welcome back. Thanks so much for joining us for this second session on bots. And again, I'm joined by James and Gary, our MVPs, who did a great job on that last session. So this one, we're going to talk about Microsoft Bot Framework and Cognitive Services. So to say, we've got James Mann from Black Marble, and we've got Gary from Mando, and they're both MVPs. And if you were in the first session, you might have noticed I did get a slight mistake in James's Twitter handle. So it's right now, James, okay? Yeah. Okay, so last session we covered off a bit about bots, why now. Covered off dialogues, how to understand the dialogue structure. We talked about debugging a bot, which is the Azure bot service. And we talked about App Insights. And we're going to kind of take it up a notch a little bit in this session and cover off form flow and cognitive services. So adding a little bit of some of the machine learning into the bot and specifically around Lewis and natural language understanding and things like the Q&A maker. We'll also look at a new control called the location control and also adding proactive notifications into a bot. So we talked about dialogues, as I say, in the first session, and we talked about this kind of specialized form of dialogue called form flow. And you're going to talk a little bit more about this now, Gary.
Yeah, that's right. So, okay. So we mentioned earlier on that you can roll your own dialogues, but sometimes there's certain scenarios where rolling your own it can be quite complex.
Sure.
And the great thing about the bot framework is there's plenty in there that we can take away some of that complexity. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is where, if you think about a traditional website where we interact with a user, mm-hmm. and we might have a form for somebody to fill out. We need to get a certain amount of information from the user. We need to handle things like validation. We need to handle things like this field is required if this field has been set to this value. And we need to give the user the option to go back or give them contextual help. And I'm sure you can imagine trying to roll your own every time with something like that could be pretty challenging.
There's so many permutations, isn't it? It's just impossible to anticipate everything.
Absolutely, and it's definitely possible with dialogues, but luckily for us, there's this special dialogue called Form Flow, which allows us to create that guided conversation that you would normally see around a more traditional form.
So sure.
Guide the user through collecting information, maybe their name, maybe their email address, and then at the end maybe getting a confirmation so that you can say, is this all correct before I submit it? And this can be really useful in a number of scenarios. So a demo I'm going to run through today on my machine will be to have a look at Energy Limited is a fictitious utility company.
Okay.
And the utility company, if my power goes out, I need to be able to raise a fault ticket with them.
Okay.
And that ticket's going to need a few different things. So it's going to need my name, it's going to need my address, etc. So if we just switch over to my machine, I can show you the bot. We've got the bot running.
We switched over?
In the emulator. Yep. We're all
okay,
over.
Okay, perfect.
So here I've started a conversation, new conversation with the bot. It's given me my welcome message, telling me what I can do. So I'm going to say my power is out, and that should trigger my bot to say, yep, okay, let's start collecting some information from you.
Right.
So are your neighbors' lights affected? So I can say, no, they're not. And it's going to carry on and ask me for my name. And it's a nice flow. All of this is done for me, and I'll show you how in a second. So I can continue to fill the format if I want to.
Okay.
And if we switch over to Visual Studio, just to show you really the minimal implementation of form flow. So in here, and we're going to come on and talk about Lewis later on, but right now you could be anywhere within your bot. Mm. And I'm instantiating a new instance of a form dialogue. From within that form dialog, when I call that method, I'm going to reference a normal .NET class called Fault Report.
Okay.
And this class has a number of properties in, and they are effectively the fields I need to take from the user. So I've got my name, I've got my address, postcode, a contact number. And you'll notice here that we've got preferred contact method. So, and this is of type contact method, which is an enum. So not only can we take plain text properties from a user, but we can give them choices as well. So you saw earlier on the bot itself, when we asked, please select whether your neighbors or streetlights are affected, we said yes, no, or maybe, and that will relate back to our enum. So again, all of this is handled for us. Very we're just creating properties.
Yeah, yeah.
And at its core, the only thing we need to do to actually get this to work and to start asking questions is to call the form builders two methods, add remaining fields, which okay. will say any fields that haven't already got a value, we want to accept those from a user because okay. we can pre-populate them if we want to.
Okay.
And then we call the build method. And that will do exactly what we just saw in the emulator. It will start to build on the bot. But there are various things that we might want to customize through this process. So if you think about, it says here, please enter name. That's fine, but it's not necessarily the language we want to use. We want to make our bot feel more natural. Please enter address. Again, we might want to alter that prompt.
Sure.
And we can do this really, really easily within FormFlow. So I'm going to just take out the model, so the properties that I've added to the fault report class. Need to remember to stop debugging first. So I'm going to take those out, and then I'm going to replace them with some I prepared earlier. And as you can see here, all I've done is decorate, and this is something that we see, you know, throughout .NET applications, in things like Entity Framework, for example. If anyone's familiar with that and you use data annotations, mm-hmm. same thing. So we've annotated our properties, and we've said, okay, well, when you're prompting for the property name, I want you to say, what's your full name? When you're prompting for address, I want you to give them a bit more context about what they need to enter.
Right, yeah.
So that's all, you know, really super useful. And actually, if I run the bot again now, and I start a new conversation, and I'll say my power's out again, which should hopefully start triggering that. And this time, I'm getting custom prompts.
Yeah.
So if I say no, instead of saying please enter name, it says what's your full name. So it's that simple, just to add that customization to our form.
You mentioned about pre-populating. What kind of scenarios could you would you pre-populate that with?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's say I was building a form flow to do a holiday request, for example.
Right.
And I need a start date, an end date, maybe some additional comments.
Yeah.
Maybe the user has said, instead of just saying, I want to book a holiday, mm-hmm. maybe they've said, I want to book a holiday starting tomorrow. So we don't necessarily have to ask that user that question. We don't want to...
In fact, you want to avoid that, really, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. So we want to say, we've already got that bit of information.
Mm.
So when we add remaining fields, then we'll only ask them that question if we've not already got an answer to it.
Yeah. So you've used a bit of kind of natural language understanding at the top,
that's
extracted
right.
the information that you can out of it, and then you're just asking for the rest.
That's right.
That's perfect. I mean, it's a great flow.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about Lewis a little bit later, but you can pass in Lewis entities, which we'll talk about, straight into FormFlow, and they can pre-populate your form for you, which is fantastic.
I think this just comes back to the point you're making about, you know, bot framework is a framework, and you have all these sort of different components that you can plug together and make something really powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if we just switch back over to my machine, and what if we want to alter the order in which we're asking things, or maybe add some additional, pepper some additional messages around?
Okay.
So right now I've just been using the out of the box add remaining fields and build method,
mm-hmm.
but I can actually replace this with some more customized code. So instead of just calling the build, I can actually chain fields together and add messages into the flow. So here I'm saying, well, I'm going to start my form with a customized message, and then I'm going to ask for whether or not the streetlights are affected, and then I can alter the order in which the fields are asked for.
Yeah.
Normally it's just inferred from the order of the properties within the class.
Mm.
So this is super useful. I can also do things like conditional fields. So this is more in, like I was talking about before, on a form you might show all of the fields, but some fields may be required if other fields have been completed.
Sure. Yeah.
With FormFlow, we can go one step further and say, well, I only want you to ask that question in certain scenarios. So here, we're asking the user for their preferred contact method, and that's based on one of our enums. It can be SMS, it can be phone.
Okay.
And or it could be email. And what we're saying here is, for our contact number, I only want you to ask for the contact number if their preferred contact method is SMS or phone.
Right.
And then the same with email. Only ask for email if their preferred contact method is email. So you're only going to get one or other of the questions. Again, towards the end, we've added in some additional messaging. Once the form has been completed, we can add a confirmation message. And you can use this syntax, which I'm showing here, to actually add fields to your confirmation message. So you can actually show the values that the user's entered and say, well, actually, I only want to show the email field here if the user has actually completed it. So that's this question mark notation, which again is super useful.
It is, yeah.
And we can call out to an on completion method. We can pass a delegate in and call out. So here, whilst I'm actually not doing anything, I'm just returning null, but this is where we could do exactly what a website form would do when we click that submit button. We can tie into a CRM service. Mm. We can tie into a third party web service. We can do whatever we want here, because this is just a web application.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then finally, one of the other things that we can do to alter this is when we've asked the user for their preferred contact method, they right now will get some buttons saying telephone, SMS, or email. Or they can type telephone, SMS, or email. But that's not necessarily very natural. Mm-hmm. You might want to say text me or phone me. Right, we want to make that conversation feel as natural as possible. So what we can actually do here is we can decorate our enum with terms. So for each term, we use the term attribute, and we can actually supply a number of additional terms for which the bot will then recognize as meaning that choice. So if I just run the bot again now and start a new conversation, and let's this my power's out, and it should now start going through that flow. So again, I've now got my welcome message.
Yep.
I'm going to answer the question. I can use the buttons as well, or I can type. Let's just quickly step through this and just fill out the form. And then it's going to ask me what my preferred contact method is as well. For now, I'm going to say text me. And because we've added those terms, it's going to understand that text me means phone. And now the next question I get is, what's your telephone number? Yeah. It's not what's your email address. Yeah.
You can build out some really nice conversational flows very quickly using this form flow.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a bunch of options which we're not going into today. Like you can power your form flow. You can design your form flow using a JSON class. Mm. So you can actually design it rather than putting it all within your code. So there's a bunch of options. I'd encourage everybody to go and read the documentation.
Awesome. And you're actually sharing this code as well, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
It'll be on the GitHub after this session. Okay, well, that's great. So hopefully you found that tool really useful. I know we've used it in a number of projects, and it's a lifesaver. Cognitive services. Let's talk about cognitive services a little bit. What are they?
Yeah, okay. So I guess what we're looking to do with cognitive services is add intelligence to our bots.
Okay.
And if you think back a number of years, the ability to add any sort of machine learning or, deep intelligence to your apps is just something that we as, mere mortals who, don't work at large organizations who have access to huge resources and huge data centers, we just couldn't do it. Mm. And Microsoft recognized this, and the fantastic thing is they've released cognitive services. It was born as a something called Project Oxford from Microsoft Research. And out of that came cognitive services, which are they're looking to democratize AI. That's the way they describe it. And it's a set of services, as you can see here. There's 25 APIs, and there's more.
That's changing all the time.
It is. I mean, we had some new ones, announced last week.
Yeah.
It's just growing all the time. And there's some phenomenal things here. I mean, I would challenge you to look at this list and not find something that you can use to make one of your apps better.
Okay.
And maybe that should be everybody's challenge today. Go away and find a cognitive service to use. We're talking about things like Lewis, which we're going to come on and talk about, to the language recognition. But it's also things like the emotion API, or the face API. So I think there was a quirky little website launched by somebody at Microsoft. I think it was How Old Am I? Like that.
Yeah.
I was quite disappointed with the results, I have to say. But
we're always at risk of upsetting.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? It just shows the power of being able to use one of these services
really easy. And they're constantly improving. That's the thing about them. I think you're on there, you had sentiment analysis as well. So things like text analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can build sentiment analysis into a bot. Imagine being able to
Works well.
Use a customer support bot and being able to track the user's, you know, level of anger, yes. for example, and then do something different. So this user's really not happy. Let's call them back rather than making them fill out a form, for example. So super useful.
Very useful. Okay.
And I guess, you know, why use cognitive services beyond what we've just said? Well, you can roll your own really easily. You can integrate them into your apps. They're just REST APIs. That's it.
Yeah.
Really simple to get started with. You can just go and get a key from the portal and just crack on and just start coding, start building.
They've all got that kind of free layer, haven't they, of usage, and then you know it's chargeable beyond that. But you know, you can call them from your websites, your applications, your chatbots, of course, you know. But yeah, I agree. I mean, there's some really powerful functionality.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can use your own language of choice. You know, we're talking about .NET here today, but we could be using Node. We could be using Python. It really doesn't matter because these are just REST APIs.
Yeah.
And they've been thoroughly tested. I mean, these are things that Microsoft are using internally as well.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are still in preview, I think, at the moment.
Yes, they are.
So you have to
absolutely.
Be. But they'll be coming to GA for soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I think, you know, obviously you showed, what, 25 APIs there. I think we'll cover off a couple of them today, I think. I think the first one, I think, James, you're going to show us, I think, is around Lewis. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we're going to have a look at Lewis. I'm going to jump into a demo pretty quick. Lewis is part of the cognitive services, as Gary was talking about. It comes under the languages barrier.
So it's language understanding intelligence service.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
The idea of Lewis is it can recognize human conversation.
Sure.
Classify it in terms of what, you know, what that language means.
What you're trying to say, okay, in an utterance, yeah.
So we have this idea of intent, which is, you know, what are you trying to achieve?
Right.
And then we can also recognize, you know, what we're talking about as well, like things we're talking about. So I've got a demo. If we could just switch over to my laptop. So Lewis, there's two parts to Lewis. There's this portal, which is almost like a moderation portal, where you can build up your Lewis model.
Okay.
So this is basically saying, you know, these are the kinds of things my users are saying, and this is what they mean when they say that.
So this is Lewis.ai. Go in there, and I can create them. And you're going to show us this, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah, so I've created a home automation model here, you know, just for expediency, with a few intents that have already been set up. So we talked about intents, and that's the kind of thing that we're trying. You know, a human talking to a bot, or maybe a different type of service, it might be trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got things like open garage door. Turn lights on, set temperature, close garage door, you know, typical sort of actions.
What I want to do,
And then we have this idea of an entity. And an entity is something that, you know, is part of the intent. You know, when we talk about turning a light on, for example, we might be talking about turning the light on in a certain room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when we're setting the temperature, we might be saying, set the temperature to a certain temperature, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
So we can define these two things here.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to go ahead and create a new intent here. So I'm going to create an intent to turn the lights off, just so you can sort of see what this looks like.
Yeah, how you do it, yeah.
So I just give it a name. And then I give an example of a command, also known as utterance, which I really struggled to say. But it's basically a piece of conversation, effectively.
Okay.
So, you know, to turn the lights off, I may say something like, turn lights off in kitchen. Yeah?
Okay. So that's helping train that up.
Exactly.
How many would you need?
So the more variations, the better, being blunt.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is all machine learning under the hood. Yeah. It's exposed in a very simplified interface, but you know, there's some complex things going on.
Yeah.
And it's all dependent on data. So the more information you can provide,
the more
patterns, variations.
Effectively, more patterns.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, one thing that we do when we're training our Lewis models, and it's quite often, if I go in and I type, you know, 10 different ways of saying something, that's not going to cover the spectrum.
Yes.
You know, I am one person.
Yes.
So quite often, I'll get 10 people in a room. I'll have a list of my intents, and I'll say, right, all of you write down 10 different ways of saying this and 10 different ways of saying that. And then, because you've got 10 people, giving you 10 different ways, suddenly you've got 100 different utterances, which hopefully will cover the spectrum. But then, you know, the machine learning will take over, obviously.
That shows the importance of, as well as having developers involved in this process, you need to have people who are aware of how users are going to use it.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, to have those edge cases of utterance, to make sure you're collecting
it. It's really important with this because, as Gary says, you know, you've got a room of 10 people, one question can be asked 10 different ways. So you need to capture that, and the model needs to understand that.
And I think that the wider point there, that it's not just limited to the developers, is so true. Yeah. Traditionally, if we're designing a website or a web application, you know, you've got designers and you've got UX experts who are looking at the user journey and the user flow, and you absolutely need the same thing around the conversation. Yeah. It's still a conversational UI.
Yeah.
You know, we need to have those user interface designers who understand how people are talking and how people are going to react, because, you know, 9 times out of 10, I get it wrong. So in terms of, you know, how a conversation might flow, and, you know, you get a consultant, a strategist to come along, have a look at it and design that conversation for you. It's so, so crucial.
Yeah, good point.
Yep. So
you got your. So you've typed in the utterance there, and you've saved it off. Okay. So we've got one against.
We've got one in there. Okay, so this is kind of the moderation side of things. So this is training the model.
Okay.
Telling Lewis, you know, what turn lights off in kitchen means, because up to this point it's just words. Isn't
sure.
It?
Sure.
We need to define the intent, and we also need to, identify any entities that are part of that.
Okay.
So the way we do that, first of all, to define the intent, we just use this, and we pick which intent to use.
Because so you're training it. Yeah.
Training, exactly.
You're saying, okay, yeah.
And then if there's any parts of this utterance that make up an entity, I just click on it, and I tell Lewis which one it is. So I say it's room.
Submit that.
Submit it.
And then once I've done that, so say I've typed in, I don't know, a number of patterns or utterances to train that.
Yep.
How do you actually train?
So, good question. So, the very first time you implement your model, you need to publish. Okay. Because I've already published this. All I need to do is train. Okay.
So that's retraining the machine learning model using all these new patterns that you've created, all these new mappings, effectively.
Yep.
Yeah. So now that you've retrained it, now you can publish the updated model.
Yeah. Yeah. And there you go.
So when I click publish, it gives me the ability to basically run a query from here. So I'll show you what that looks like, and then I'll talk you through it. So I don't know, turn lights off in kitchen. Okay, and then, in fact, I'm gonna do turn kitchen lights on, because I know I've trained that.
Okay.
So I can show you some parts of that. So I just run that. And that's basically making a RESTful HTTP request. Yep. It's giving us a JSON object back.
Yep.
Inside that JSON object, we've got things like, you know, what the query was, the thing that I'm trying to interpret. And then it's broken it down in terms of the most likely intent. So it's identified, okay, you know.
Yeah, it's giving you back there.
I want to turn the lights on. So it's done a good job of that. But, you know, if maybe the confidence here, which is a score, maybe if that was lower, maybe it was 0.5 or something. Mm. We'd maybe need to disambiguate further.
Yes, you can just type in more sentences, retrain again, and it's that continuous loop.
Exactly.
Really. Yeah, yeah,
so
that makes sense.
You know, Lewis recognizes that it's not guaranteed to be that, so it gives you the other possible intents as well. So you can, you know, if you want to, you can let your users pick one. Okay, that's an option. You don't need to use that, but it's there. Now, the interesting thing is it's automatically identified the kitchen as an entity. So it's pulled that information out for me. So I can then go in and consume that from a line of business application. You know, maybe I've got an application that's going to go off and turn up the kitchen light on now, which is really, really nice.
And they're the sorts of entities that we could have been passing into our form flow. So, when you get these entities back from Lewis, then you can pass them in. So it's really, really useful, that entity recognition.
Sure. Okay.
I'm just going to jump ahead to a demo, because we're running a bit behind on this. But what we've got is in Bot Framework, we've got a Lewis dialogue, which again is another one of these pluggable components that we can use. Works very similar to something that Gary will be showing you later, in that we decorate the class with these attributes, and we're basically just binding it to the Lewis model using those attributes.
So that's just the ID subscription key, yeah?
Yeah, and then for each intent that we've defined in Lewis, all we're doing is binding it using one of these attributes. Yeah. Really, really simple. So you can see I've added one for set temperature, open garage door, and so on.
Okay.
I've got an intent for none, so that's if I type in something that Lewis doesn't recognize, I can say, sorry, I don't know what you mean. And this last one's quite interesting because this is an intent that has some entity recognition in it as well.
Okay.
So Lewis passes us this Lewis result. Inside the Lewis result is obviously the intent, but we also have the entities,
you
as you saw before.
Do something with that then,
So you can see here, I've got a link query that's saying, pull out the entity where the entity type is room. And then we're just saying, turn in the room lights on. So I'm just going to run this real quick.
Let's quickly see that in action.
And then if I just connect to the bot.
Okay, so open the emulator again.
Yep, so I can type in turn on the kitchen light.
So natural language.
So you can see it's recognized.
It's taken the text, it's sent it off to your Lewis model, and it's come back and said, this is the intent, this is the entity.
All I've had to do is just bind it to my model. Yeah, super straightforward. I just want to show one more thing. I know I'm running a bit behind, but if I put some variations in, switch kitchen light on, you can see, in that case, it actually hasn't recognized the room, because I haven't trained it enough, but it still recognizes it as the intent.
That's fine, you just showed it that it hasn't recognized it enough, but actually I can just go back, retrain that model, and republish it, and the bot will work.
Yeah, and the portal gives you suggestions as well of things it may not have got right, which you can then go in and clarify and say, actually, no, that was this intent. And then over time, I mean, the accuracy that we've seen with Lewis is phenomenal. So
excellent. Yeah. Oh, that's good to hear. Okay, good. So let's switch on to the next one. So let's go back to the slides and have a look at Q&A Maker. So this is the second cognitive API that we're going to look at.
That's right.
And I think, Gary, you're going to cover this one off for us.
So this is another cognitive service, one of those 25 APIs that are available. And this one is super straightforward to get going with. And one of the really common scenarios that we get asked all the time as MVPs, and I know you get asked all the time, as someone from Microsoft is, how can I get going with bot framework? You know, how can I use a chat bot? And, you know, I want to just be able to use the bot to answer some common questions. We could use Lewis if we wanted to and build up an intent for every, you know, common question that we've got.
Yeah.
But Lewis has its limits. So Lewis will handle up to 40 different intents, and you might have a lot of questions and answers. And that's where the Q&A Maker service comes in. So you can head on over to qandamaker.ai. And if we switch over to my machine, I'll give you a quick run through of how the Q&A Maker service works.
Okay.
And essentially, Q&A Maker service will just take your existing Q&A page on a website and allow you to, it will build a conversational model effectively, some learning around that, some intelligence, so that when a customer or a user comes to your bot and asks a question, it will find the most appropriate answer. They don't have to ask the question in terms of exactly how you've laid it out on your website, for example.
Okay.
So really, really useful. I am, you know, almost every brand out there has a Q&A page, and quite often they have hundreds of questions and answers. So imagine being able to take those questions and answers and expose them to your users in a conversational way. Perfect. It's fantastic.
Yeah. This is a really low friction way to get
going. Absolutely, minutes, literally minutes. So I'm over here at qandamaker.ai. I can create a new service. I just give my service a name. And then what it's asking me for is a URL to my FAQ page. And for the example here, I'm going to use the Azure support FAQs.
Okay.
So things like asking about what preview services are or billing questions, for example.
And whilst you're doing that and building that, I mean, well, in fact, just clicking a button, of course, you've got, if you haven't got a URL, you can use a document. It's just a set of key value pairs.
You can upload key value pairs, and you don't even have to do that. You can skip straight forward to the next step and just start typing in questions and answers if you want to. So what that's done now, that's that. You saw how quick that was. That's generated 49 Q&A pairs based on the Azure FAQs. Nice. So do I receive 24/7 support? And it's got the answer from the website right there. It's also added what's called an editorial item, so that if the user says hi, it will return with hello. So it's a really easy way of actually building some manners potentially into your bot. So once it's actually done this, we can switch over to the train tab and immediately get going. The really nice thing here is you have effectively a chatbot emulator built into the service, so I can just start saying things like, what is a preview service?
Well, this is the emulator, but of course, like, this is a REST API, so I can have this within my bot that then sits in Facebook and Skype and Slack and Teams.
So I've just said, what is a preview service? It's come back with the most appropriate answer there. Yeah. But this, again, it comes back to training, some initial training.
So if that was wrong, you could...
So you could pick an alternative answer on the left-hand side here, or I could put in an alternative question. So if I know I get asked that question in a particular way all the time, I can pop that in there. And as soon as I've done that and I've finished my training, then I can click Save and Retrain. And then once I'm ready and I'm happy, I've done that training, that's just going to take a few seconds. We're then ready to publish our Q&A service. So you go ahead and click on the Publish tab. As soon as we do that, that's going to publish it. It's going to make our endpoint public.
Sure.
We immediately get a sample HTTP request, which we can go and use if we want to. But even more usefully, if you open up the Learn How tab, you then get sample code for all sorts of different, sort of C#, for example. If you were building this into a C# bot, this is the way you could come to grab it. And you can drop this into any dialogue that we were talking about before, and it, it works a treat.
That's very powerful functionality.
Yeah, so absolutely.
So many people have asked questions on that.
But what I've done, I've made a new NuGet package available to make it even simpler.
Nice.
So what we've got here is, if we just have a look at the NuGet packages that are installed, I've installed the Q&A Maker dialog package, which I've made available. And literally all you have to do to get going here is create a dialog that inherits from Q&A Maker dialog, and you just specify your subscription key and your knowledge base ID, which are both available from our publish page. So here's my knowledge base ID, here's my subscription ID. And now within my bot, when a new message comes in, I'm handing it off to the Q&A dialog. That's immediately going to go away, send off my message to the Q&A Maker service, and respond. And then you can do things like overriding the no match message. So sorry, I didn't find anything. So we just
make it
that
a little bit more friendly.
Or you might find Q&A Maker will return a score, a confidence score in terms of how confident it is in the answer. So if it's a, you know, if a medium confidence, maybe 50%, then at that stage we could say, okay, we want to alter the message slightly. So we're very, very quickly just start a new conversation there and say something like, what is a preview service? So again, we ask that question in the emulator. What I should do is go away to the Q&A service, come back, and you get your answer. And that's how simple
awesome
it is to get there.
That's smart. 5 minutes work.
It's very smart. And we've seen a lot of interest in Q&A Maker with bots. Well, they're great demos, and I think, you both got that code to share in GitHub afterwards. Correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, so for the last 10 minutes, we thought we'd cover off a couple of kind of commonly seen requirements or requests, I suppose. The first thing is around the Bing location control. So I think, Gary, you're going to talk about that.
Absolutely.
So if you could give us a few minutes on that.
Yes, totally. So this is a really common request. People asking a user for their location within a bot. And prior to having this control, we would have to ask for that location if we wanted to do any validation or we wanted to provide any confirmations. We'd, again, have to roll our own. But the great thing is this is available out there on NuGet. It's open source in GitHub. The team are really responsive, so any feedback you've got, just visit the GitHub and start talking to them. And what it effectively does is it allows us to put in a location or an address. We could put in a postal code or a zip code in America, or we could put in 5 St. Paul's Square, Liverpool. and it's going to go away and use the Bing service in the background, Bing Maps, and validate that address and give us some visual feedback.
Or within that conversational field.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we can specify required fields. So we can say, well, I must have the street name and the postcode, or I must have the house number and the postcode. So it's really super powerful, but it's just encapsulating that thing that we would have had to roll our own up to now. Nice. And you can see an example of it on the right, but if we switch over to my machine.
Switch to your machine.
So now on, hopefully when the, if we can just, yep, there we go, fantastic. So again, just very quickly to show how simple it is to wire this up, you need to sign up for a Bing Maps API key, and you specify that. I've specified a prompt, so in this scenario, it's my fictitious energy company again, coming back. And the customer said, I want to know if there's any current problems. So we're saying, to check the current instance, I just need your postcode. And then we create an instance of the location dialog. And once I've added the NuGet package, this is available for me.
Yep.
I'm passing in my API key, the channel ID, because you, by default, this will ask you, give you a text prompt for an address.
Okay.
But if you're in Facebook, you can choose to use Facebook's inbuilt location picker as well,
okay,
which is, again, really useful. I've said the postcode is required, and I've overridden some of the messages for it by creating a location resource manager, inheriting from the location resource manager and overriding some of the strings. So you can really customize the experience. There's a bunch of strings that you can override. So it's really just a few lines of code, and then going back to the first session, we just call context.call and hand over control to our location dialog, add that to the stack, and when it's finished, it's going to come back. So I'm just going to run that now and just show you that working in the emulator. So we'll start a new conversation and say something like, are there any problems? And hopefully what that's going to do is it's actually using Lewis to determine the user's intent.
Okay.
And it's going to... Let's try that again. Nope, can't find an answer to the question. So this, there you go, it's the demo gods coming back to haunt me. So what we're going to do is just switch back to the slides, and I'll just very quickly talk about that. So what would normally happen if the demo had worked is you would get a prompt, you can put in an address. Yep. So in this instance, they've said 100 Fifth Avenue, Seattle. Yep. But what that's actually gone and done is it's gone away to the Bing Maps service. It's come back and it's actually found the zip code in this instance.
Okay.
But in the demo that will be available on GitHub after this, so you can just go and grab it and start using it, you'll see that it will find the postcode and then trigger some actions based on that and show the user a map, which is, you know, it's really useful to start using these.
Yeah.
You don't want your conversation to just be text.
Yeah.
So the more you can be adding these rich cards and carousels, which we're not going into today,
but
I think you covered in
we did
last
cover
year's
in the sessions. In the first session, the session back in September, exactly. Yeah, but you're absolutely right, and it's having that experience within the conversation, not expecting them to jump out of the conversation and back into
yes.
it.
Yeah,
it's all within that window.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's very good. Thank you for that.
Thanks.
And then the final thing I think we want to cover off today was around proactive bots. So can you tell us a little bit more about proactive bots? Because we get asked about this quite a lot.
We do. It comes up all the time. And, you know, today we've talked about imperative conversations, haven't we? You know, you ask a bot a question and the bot comes back instantly with a response. Now, you know, if there's a human involved in the process, or if there's some kind of long-running process, you're not going to be able to generate a response straight away. So that's kind of where the proactive bot comes in. So we've got a few examples here. You know, you can use it for reminders and alerts.
Okay.
So here we've got, you know, a reminder saying it's Robin's birthday on Saturday. You know, it's quite a nice little feature. Long-running tasks, so, you know, imagine you're doing some kind of aggregation, maybe comparing car insurance
you
prices.
You go off and do it, and then it comes back 5 minutes later with,
The key thing is, you know, the user's still engaged, but they don't have to sort of sit talking to the bot while it's doing this thing.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to call out here is these things don't have to be time-bound or even prompted by a user, you know, saying, I'd like you to go away and do something. So jumping back to the energy support scenario, I've gone and checked if there's any problems in, you know, my area, and I've said, here's my postcode, and it says there's no problems. But 6 months later, there is a problem. So we can store the fact that I've got my postcode and the channel ID, and I know you're going to come on to the resumption cookie in a minute and show us how we can do this.
Yeah.
But we could store that postcode. And in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, say, there is now a power cut in PR9.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go and let anybody who's previously spoken to me with that postcode know that there's a problem.
Exactly.
So, yeah, absolutely. It's very great scenario.
I mean, that's fantastic. And that really explains the name, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's why it's a proactive bot.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're being proactive.
Yeah.
So we've got another example, you know, cross-selling. It's a bit of a marketing thing, but, you know, maybe someone's purchased a product and you've created a new product. So you can use that to maybe generate some additional sales. You
know,
there's loads of scenarios that we could go through. Now, the way we handle this in Bot Framework is we use something called a resumption cookie. So I've got a little diagram here just to illustrate this.
Don't talk it down. You work very hard on this.
So we've got some nice animations in there. It looks very simple, but it's...
You're a braver than man.
Yeah, there you go. So the first conversation is going through the bot in the middle, obviously. But we're going to the service on the right-hand side. And that's kind of the normal, you know, the normal process where the service can generate a response instantly. But that's not always going to be the case. Mm. Maybe there's some kind of human involved. Maybe the human needs to go off and do something, maybe book travel, or maybe investigate, or that kind of thing. So the way we handle that is, again, we still go into the service, but the service, when it realizes it can immediately respond, do something with that query, it generates something called a resumption cookie. And that resumption cookie can be used by whoever's picking up the conversation at a later date to continue or resume the conversation. And the key thing is, we're resuming it back through the same channel. So from the user's perspective, they're still talking to the...
Yeah. So as long as the user's kept them in their contacts list, haven't they? Because you can't just have a bot sending out proactive messages.
Exactly.
They've got to have added in, the same way they've added in a friend into their conversation.
Exactly. Yeah. This is not a tool for you to spam people. This is a tool to engage with people and give them information that they might need.
Okay. So you're going to give us a bit of a demo?
Yep, so if we can just switch to my machine, I've got a really simple demo just to kind of illustrate this. So the two bits that you saw in the diagram, we need to save the resumption cookie. In this demo, I'm going to save it to disk, okay? So all we do is we create a new resumption cookie inside our controller, which you've seen already. So we're creating a resumption cookie here. We're saving it to disk as a cookie JSON.
Mm.
And that's it. We're done with it at that point.
And it's just worth pointing out there that the resumption cookie is created from the activity, from the message. That message, as you can see in the emulator, if you're debugging your bot in the emulator, you can actually see the JSON behind the message, and that contains your channel ID, your conversation ID, all of those things that we need to create a resumption cookie.
Okay, that's a good point.
So real quick, there's two parts to this, but I'm going to show you the first part first. So this is the someone's maybe reporting a problem with a website.
Yep.
So, you know, imagine you've got a customer support bot with humans in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I could be saying there is a problem with your website. And maybe this bot can take care of, 80% of queries automatically, maybe using Q&A Maker.
Yep.
But some things it just doesn't know how to deal with.
Yeah.
So it's going to come back and say, I don't know how to deal with it, so I've passed it on to a human. And at some point, they're going to get back to you.
Okay.
So the code, just to illustrate what's going on here, I saved that as a cookie. I'll just drag that into there just so you can see what's in there. So inside the cookie, we have all the information we need to be able to continue the
channel stuff. ID, the bot ID, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in order to kind of simulate a long-running process, what I've got is another service hosted inside here called Callback. Okay. So I'm just going to stop this just to kind of show you the code. So inside Callback, this is just a RESTful endpoint. We're passing in some text, and then we're loading the cookie from disk here, in this line here.
Okay.
So you can see, just loading the same file,
reading
it in, creating a new resumption cookie with that data, and then we're using that resumption cookie to send a message back to through the right channel, basically.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to run that. And to call my RESTful endpoint, I'm going to use curl. So I'm just going to copy this into here. So you can see I'm just doing a HTTP post with text saying the problem with the website is fixed, okay? So if I pull that up there and then I pull the emulator, so you should hopefully see it come in. When I press enter.
Simulating that.
So you can see.
Wow.
Fantastic. Yes. That's it. I've kind of skipped over it. Obviously, there's a lot of production issues there. You'd want to save it somewhere a bit more.
Yeah, but you show the general technique, the
it's
flow.
The principle,
yeah,
the principle. Isn't it? Yeah.
And you can use a proactive bot. You know, as we said, you could be something that's like 6 months. You know, 6 months providing that conversation's still active. But one of the key scenarios that we hear people talking about all the time is handing off to a human for web chat and things like that. So the ability for somebody to start talking to a human within the same chat window, you don't need to say, well, now you've finished talking to the bot. Go over here and start talking to our live chat. We can actually handle both of them within the same context,
powerful.
Which
yeah.
is great.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's excellent. Well, look, I think that was the last demo. Resources. Gary and James have such great blogs. Please go and visit them. They I think you've got most of this content on there, or will have anyway if you haven't. Twitter handles, say James is now right there. There's James E. Mann there, Gary Pretty, and my own Twitter handle as well. Very active on cognitive and bots there. Lots of samples from today. I think you're going to continue, you're going to update a few of them and get them in there, and those will be available for you to do. Across all of the different demos, you can take that code and use it. Lots of samples as well at aka.ms/bot resources. Tutorials, case studies, including a link I think to your video tutorials as well.
Yes.
The bot framework, you can go and see it. It's all open source, the bot framework. There's also lots of samples. And then have a look at more of those cognitive services. We covered off a few of them, but there are lots more. So go to aka.ms/cognitive. Which brings us to the end. And I just want to thank you both very much.
Thank you,
fantastic.
Very enjoyable.
Two sessions.
Thanks.
Yeah, really. It's
and
great.
If anybody out there, you know, if you're building your bots, you know, we're MVPs, we want to help. So if you've got any questions, we're going to be answering questions on Facebook.
Yeah, the Facebook link is there, yeah. So please ask your questions. You know, they'll answer most questions around the bot framework. Then this session and the previous one will be available on demand on Channel 9, so you can watch it again. And say there's more information about our MVP program, because you're both bot MVPs. So there's more information about that on that link as well. But look, thanks ever so much for joining us. Thank you again, both of you.
Thank you.
I hope you found that useful. Lots more really useful content coming up on Tech Days Online over the next few days, so please stay tuned. Thanks very much.